Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Inside. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Well, a historic and extremely bold step to combat climate change. That's some of the praise from supporters of the California Air Resources Board moving to ban the sale of new gas-powered vehicles in the state by 2035. The board's decision is a final step in an executive order from Governor Newsom issued 2 years ago, which is an aggressive move to shift the state away from its dependence on fossil fuels for daily transportation. According to the state, pollution from our tailpipes account for more than half of California's greenhouse gas emissions. The decision is also expected to have big ripple effects across the country. But it also drew sharp criticism and raised questions about how this ambitious goal will be implemented. Take this heat wave as an example. 116 degrees yesterday in downtown Sacramento. The state's power grid operator asked electric car owners to hold off on charging their cars during flex alerts, leading some to question if the state's grid can sustain an influx of EVs. Others view the move as California once again setting a lofty goal it may very well fall short of. Well, to dive deeper, we've invited Professor David Rapson, an economist at UC Davis. Good morning, Professor Rapson.
Good morning, Vicky.
So this has been 2 years in the making, but as someone who really teaches and also studies energy and economics, what stands out to you about the Air Resources Board moving to really greenlight this executive order into law?
Well, this is really a big moment. I mean, when the fifth largest economy in the world moves to eliminate its main transportation technology, that really is bold. And they've done it with a escalating target of reducing the numbers of gasoline cars that are allowed to be sold over time. And by 2035, the plan is for no gasoline-powered vehicles to be sold.
Yeah. And Car and Driver, the magazine, called the move the most drastic change in the California Air Resources Board's 55-year history. What makes it so momentous?
Well, electrification is going to be a very important part of a successful energy transition, and so moving in this direction is very important. And really, the question here is, you know, how fast should we move in that direction? And this really is a very bold step to eliminate the sale of gasoline-powered cars by 2035. But there really are lots of details to be worked out. And really, the question of how this all plays out is going to be determined by those details.
Yeah, 2035 is not that long. It's just a little over a decade, and that can go by in a blink. What are some of the biggest challenges it faces?
Well, the biggest challenge, I think, is that we don't really know a couple of major factors about this market. So, for example, how much do people in general want electric vehicles? On the one hand, California has really been on the frontier of this. It's clear that the demand for electric vehicles in California is very high, but we're not talking about, you know, the 10 or 15% of people who really value electric vehicles now. We're talking about getting to 50%, 80%, 100%. And right now, electric vehicles are a lot more expensive than gasoline cars. And so there's a question, how much more are people going to be willing to pay? Are the subsidies that are available today going to be enough to get enough people to choose EVs over gasoline alternatives over this transition path? There are really a lot of questions.
Yeah, I mean, just according to Kelly Blue Book, the average price of a new electric vehicle is around $66,000. That's just completely out of reach for a lot of Californians. The state is offering some incentives. It's approved nearly $4 billion over the course of 3 years for programs to help low and middle income residents afford electric vehicles. But is that enough?
Well, I think one of the reasons why electric vehicles are so expensive today is because they have been targeting wealthier demographics.
Yeah, you often think of like Tesla.
Yeah, sure. And that's because batteries are still really expensive. They've come down 90% in cost in the last decade. So that's really dramatic. But you're comparing, you know, the storage technology in an electric vehicle is an expensive battery versus a, you know, $100 plastic tank in a gasoline car. That's a big cost differential that needs to be made up. But what I think is going to happen with this policy, and you already see it in the marketplace, is that auto manufacturers are going to introduce new less expensive vehicles that are going to be more desirable to the mass market. And that's going to bring down the cost.
Another issue, and we've been living through it this week, especially yesterday, and it's going to continue today and through the week, you know, record heat, potential rolling blackouts across the state. I mean, we all got that emergency alert on our cell phones yesterday. You know, CAISO, which is the California Independent System Operator, they asked Californians to avoid charging their electric vehicles during its flex alert hours because of the heat wave. So can this electrical grid withstand a projected increase in EVs?
This is going to be a major challenge. And the reason is because two things are happening simultaneously here. On the one hand, we're increasing the demand for electricity on the grid through these electric vehicles, and we're trying to reduce the amount of supply on the grid that's coming through fossil fuel sources. And so the increase in demand, the decrease in supply, this is going to create a lot of tension during the peakiest periods. And so it's going to be really important through this transition to provide the incentives for electric vehicle drivers to charge at the right times. If everyone plugged in their electric vehicle yesterday at 5 p.m., we would have had rolling blackouts. Instead, we avoided it. But that was mostly due to appeals and not really financial incentives. I think that we're going to have to really take a close look at electricity tariff design and increase the prices during these critical peak periods.
Right, because our grid also isn't an island. You know, we rely on other states, and it's like a Western grid. I mean, we've even shared electricity with Texas.
Absolutely, yeah. This heat wave was throughout the West, and so that makes it more expensive to import electricity as well.
Yeah. I'm curious, there are some exemptions to this when it comes to plug-in hybrid cars. You know, sometimes, I mean, I kind of liken California as like car is the Prius. So what happens with hybrids and plug-in hybrid cars? Because that is an exemption to this ban, right?
Absolutely. And actually, I think it might be appropriate not to refer to this as a ban, because there are some pressure relief valves that are built in. And I would consider those to be very nice elements of the policy. Without these pressure relief valves, the cost of implementing this policy could be extraordinarily high, and it could run into political resistance. I mean, we see that when energy prices and transportation services get expensive worldwide, you know, people respond to that through protests. So these exemptions are actually, I think, a feature and not a bug of the policy. And one of the things that is very interesting is what is going to happen at the end of this policy when if there's not high enough to, you know, we're talking about 100% of new cars being EVs. If there's some demand still for gasoline cars, there's a provision in this regulation at the moment for manufacturers to pay a fee, a $20,000 fee per gasoline car sold. And that also is good. That's a pressure release valve that I think is going to help to keep the cost of this policy low.
You know, California also produces oil, and it's not a surprise. The Western States Petroleum Association, which represents the oil industry in five Western states, includes California, unsurprisingly critical of the announcement. What weight do their arguments have?
Well, I'm not familiar with their specific arguments, but
they claim that taxpayers will ultimately pay billions to add more charging stations for electric vehicles, and tens of thousands will lose their jobs as a result of this.
Well, certainly this policy is going to be expensive. And when we talk about subsidizing electric vehicles, certainly the purchaser of that vehicle is going to pay less as a result of the subsidies. But those subsidies are expensive. They're going to be funded through the tax base. We as Californians are all paying for those. That is absolutely an important factor to consider. And the question about jobs, you know, I would more frame it in terms of the cost of transportation services. You know, if we are trying to shift people away from a reliable, relatively low-cost transportation technology, which is gasoline cars, you know, this is going to impose a cost on society, on drivers. And the question is, how much is that cost going to be, and how much are people going to be willing to endure?
Yeah. Setting a goal is one thing. Accomplishing that goal is something different. And, you know, California is known for setting ambitious goals. But recent reports from UC Berkeley and even our state's own auditor found that the state may very well fall short of some of the lofty goals that it's setting. You know, do you believe this could potentially be another situation of setting a climate goal bar too high for itself?
Well, it's going to be difficult to actually meet this goal, but I think that California has a history of setting aspirational climate policy, and that really has moved the country in the direction of decarbonization. And I think that that is something to be commended. And, you know, the way that this all plays out really remains to be seen. And I would kind of personally be surprised that if we hit 100% EVs by 2035, but certainly this policy is going to move us very quickly and with strength in the direction of electrification, which again is an important part of a successful energy transition.
So even if we don't meet that goal, it's still meaningful.
I think it is meaningful. And there are two things that I think when you zoom out and look at this policy, there are two things that I think are interesting. The first is that we're going to be, by shifting transportation to electricity, we're going to be reducing demand for gasoline and oil. And so that has an important framing in the context of world events today, where energy security is something that we all care about. And so you know, that's potentially a benefit that's going to be experienced. But one of the things that I find interesting is, in the context of global climate change, this is a global problem. And so what California is doing, it has to have kind of two objectives. One is reducing emissions in California, but the other is figuring out how to help solve this problem in the developing world. And I think that this policy is very advantageous for California's emissions reductions, but I don't see electrification of light-duty vehicles worldwide as being a really viable path for a lot of developing countries who don't have reliable electricity and who would have to incur very large expenses to build out a reliable grid. So I think this, you know, this isn't a silver bullet, but it's definitely pushing California in an important direction.
You bring up a good point, because you believe that there's a strong distinction between, on the one hand, successful decarbonization in California, which is also a global issue, but also California's desire to be a model for others nationally and internationally to follow. What distinction are you talking? Are they mutually exclusive, or is there kind of like a cavernous gap in between them? Like, what distinction are you talking about?
They're not mutually exclusive, but I think, you know, California is an extremely rich state in the wealthiest country in the world. And when we think about the decarbonization pathway in that setting, it's probably going to be very different from India, China, Sub-Saharan Africa. And again, I think that we need to really be investing in alternate decarbonization pathways, particularly for transportation. And, you know, if the vision here is to build extraordinarily expensive electric grids in developing countries and charge EVs to meet their transportation needs, I think there's a very low probability that that's what we end up seeing.
You know, federal law allows California to set its own air quality standards, which it's doing. 17 states have adopted versions of California's stricter pollution regulation in years past. So this isn't new. But how likely will these states, do you think, how likely will they follow California this time around?
Well, I think many of them will follow California. My understanding is that in some of these states, there are trigger laws that are already, you know, ready to go into effect that will adopt this ZEV mandate when it's implemented. But there's also some controversy in some of these states where, you know, past administrations agreed to be part of it, and now the present administrations are fighting it. So I think it remains to be seen. But certainly among people who care about the environment, this is, I think, a popular policy. I think you'll see support in many of those states.
Finally, you know, we're a week into this announcement. When kind of reading about it reading about it, are there other impacts that this ban, or not ban, but this new change will have that isn't being discussed that you think people should know about, whether economically or environmentally?
Well, I think that this is going to really be a slow and long transition. Even with such an ambitious policy, there are going to be gasoline-powered cars on the road for decades in California. And so, you know, we talked about some of the exemptions before. One of my big questions is, how are imports from other states going to be treated under this policy? You know, if it's very expensive or impossible to buy a gasoline car in California, will people just go to Nevada and buy one and bring it across? It's not clear to me how this policy treats those types of purchases. I don't think there's anything about used cars that's being discussed yet. And again, I think that those are good things from an environmental perspective, sure, we want to begin phasing out fossil fuels and gasoline cars, but it's going to take a long time. And if we push it too quickly, people are going to try to figure out ways around it. And so this is the game that's going to be played. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Professor Rapson, thanks for the conversation.
Thank you.
David Rapson is an economist at UC Davis, providing some context and details behind California's decision to ban the sale of new gas-powered vehicles by 2035, with some provisions, of course. Up next, we'll head up to the community of Klamath River, just south of the Oregon border in Siskiyou County, and listen to how residents are recovering after the McKinney fire devastated most of their town. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.